your relationship with your kiddo is supposed to be lifelong. And the damage that you cause your child as a child, they get to determine whether they want to have a lifelong relationship with you.
Ugly Truth of Divorce podcast with Sam and Leah, helping you not just survive, but thrive.
All right, you guys, hey. Welcome back. It's another episode of The Ugly Truth of Divorce, where today we are going to be talking about the toxicity of a divorce. I get clients all the time who jump on a consult and I can just feel where they're at. Like I can just feel it. And it's this negative mindset. Their bodies look tired and worn out. Their attitude is just down. If I had to ask them to say something positive about themselves, I don't know that they could come up with anything because this divorce is just wrecking them. And I say that from a place of like, that was me. So I think it's very easy for me to recognize. What was your mindset and physicality of like, as you were going through the process? And real quick, how long did your divorce process really take? Because yours was very amicable, both of them.
Well, the first one was long because we had just moved from California. And so in order to file for divorce in the state of New York, you had to be a resident of New York, which meant we broke up and had to wait 12 consecutive months until we were a resident.
Why the fuck do they make people for do divorce? That? I don't understand that. Like, are you wanting every divorce to be a Dateline special, making people wait?
Yeah, we had to wait almost a year to even file. And then I feel like it was maybe 4 months or 6 months or something until it was like finalized.
So how were you? Were you toxic or? Because I was toxic.
I was very angry. I was angry and had like no patience with him. Just was so frustrated trying to co-parent with him, especially because that for that whole first year, we had nothing on paper. I mean, it was really just all us figuring things out. So it was really, that was the stressful part. And, but I did none of the things you're supposed to do as far as myself, like self-reflecting or getting therapy or working on my self-esteem, I was just immediately in another relationship because it just made me feel better and it was a good distraction.
Right. I chose a path of destruction as I went through mine. I allowed all the false allegations to weigh on me so heavily that I like put a shield up and my shield was alcohol. My shield was diving into a relationship with somebody that was inappropriate. Isolating myself from friends and family and picking a circle of people where I was like the top dog that had her shit together. So I was really around a bunch of bottom dwellers because my shit was not together. But in comparison, I look like, you know, a model citizen. And I just, the toxicity was eating me alive, like eating me alive. I mean, and let's describe the toxicity. It was not just the false allegations being made about me. It was how it was like perceived, you know, divorce is so dirty. And so, you know, you're a failure and oh, be ashamed and embarrassing and all that. And then just like how I felt about myself as a mom, what I was putting my kids through. I mean, but really it was how he was just bashing me around the town. And I just felt so alone. Like, and it was like one of those, I felt like I was in a movie a lot of the time of like, is this really happening? Are people believing this shit? Like, or they just love the storyline and like keep telling the story, you know? And so I just didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to overcome it. I didn't know how to just even realize that there was another side of things. I think I was so deep into the negative toxicity of the divorce and the whole process that I didn't know I could make it stop. I really didn't. I just thought it was like a train that I was on and it was one way and I just had to ride it out. And now having the perspective I have and now having the training I have and the therapy I have and the healing I have, I so regret a lot of my decisions back then, but I see the same mirror image in my clients when they get on a consult. And I'm just like, I think that's why people make consults with me because I have been them before and I have been in that place and I know what it is. So today, you know, Leah was like, hey, what do we want to talk about? And I'm like, I just want to talk about how to overcome the toxicity. Like as you're going through this process, we're going to give you, you know, at least 10 helpful things to kind of focus your attention on because focusing on the negative shit, just you're not going to heal. I mean, it took me 8 years to figure all this shit out, guys. 8 long years before I jumped off the train and got on a different one. So let's just go ahead and start. What was the first one that kind of came up that we say 1,000 times a month?
Self-care.
Yeah.
Self-care, because, and it seems like it's common sense, but it's not, because it's you're so focused on, you're in survival mode. You're focused on your kids.
Fight or flight.
You're focused on the divorce. You're returning the emails. You're looking at the texts. You're talking to your attorney, and you really put yourself on the back burner. But if anything, you should be prioritizing yourself over everything else, because divorce, quite literally, it's one of the hardest things that you can go through in your life. It is extremely stressful. It can be traumatic. So that is a key time in your life that you need to be focusing on.
Intentional.
Taking care of yourself. Yes. Being intentional about, are you getting quality sleep? Are you drinking enough water? Are you eating foods that nourish your body? Are you getting outside in nature? Are you moving your body? Are you exercising? Are you doing things that help ground you and center yourself? Because if you're not doing that and all you're thinking about is your divorce and all the shitty feelings that come up with that, you're, number one, making things even harder for yourself. Number two, you're destroying your body. The cortisol levels alone from all of the stress can turn into additional ailments that you're now dealing with when you're trying to juggle all of these other things. But you're just doing yourself a disservice. You're also just not as efficient. You can't juggle all the things as well. You can't parent as well. You can't work and have that focus at work as well. And when you're having conversations with your attorney and about your divorce, you don't want to be just emotionally reactive to everything and just triggered 24/7. Right. So the more you practice self-care and ground yourself and do things like that, you can be more strategically responsive to what's going on around you, which then will give you better results.
I think the cortisol level, really, we need to touch on that for a second. And you witnessed me not having that anymore. And I kept saying, like, I feel like I've lost something. I feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like something, so part of me is gone.
You're normal.
It was like literally fight or flight had left my body, and I did not recognize myself. I mourned it. I grieved it. I cried about it because I couldn't figure out, like, it took me a month to figure out what I felt like I was getting sick. Something was happening, and it was my body was a different, it was a completely different calm that was, I'd never felt before. I didn't have this all the time, or like, what's that message? Or, oh my God, what's in my inbox? Or who's at the store? Like, it had all left all at the same time. And because it was in my system for so long, 15 years, 16 really, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know my body could feel this sense of peace and priority. And I'm priority being like the number one thing. Like, peace is great, but feeling like I was the priority in the room and like I was untouchable and nothing could get to me. And it was an empowering feeling, but I grieved fight or flight because I was so used to being anxious all the time and worried all the time and like paranoid all the time, like looking over my shoulder. Like, when that all left, it was an empowering feeling eventually once I figured out what it was. Cause I just didn't know for a long time. I was like, what's going on with my body? Like, why am I was tired for a lot at the beginning, cause I think my body was finally resting, and then it like just healed itself. And now it's like, God, I wish I could give this to everybody. I wish I could bottle it up and give it to every divorced woman out there and be like, you're going to get this power back. I swear you are, but you got to work at it, which goes into number two. This is one thing that we say all the time. We wish we would have had. I'm a constant learner. You're a constant learner. We're always reading books. We're always in podcasts. I listen to 2 podcasts mandatory a day. I'm always wanting an edge. Like, my body just loves, my brain loves to be learning. And I think having a support system and where you can be learning as you're going through your divorce and co-parenting is critical. And I'm all for your attorney. This is not an anti-attorney conversation, but you have to figure out, do I know as much as I need to know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I have all the skills necessary for this divorce? And I think one of the parts you're anxious about in your divorce is the unknown.
Yeah.
What's next? What's this mean? What's the paperwork? I don't understand. So go get an education. Go find resources that help you better equip yourself. And one of those is what we offer, The Next Chapter, which we talk about a lot, a private support group for women where we give trainings every month. We pull in attorneys, we pull in specialists, we talk about, you know, different topics to make you feel like, okay, I got a grasp on that now. I know what narcissism is. I know how to co-parent better. I know what this means. I know what a parenting plan is. But I think seeking the right type of support for you. Again, you heard my story. I surrounded myself by people I was better than so that it justified my actions. That was the honest to God truth. Right. I surrounded myself with people that were fucking up worse than me, were doing worse things than I was, so I could go, see, what I'm doing is not so bad. It's not. Because look at those guys. Mm-hmm. But that was my circle.
Right.
You know, like that just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So the next one, focus on healing.
Yeah.
And I want you to talk about the after divorced healing. But for me, I think too many of you are trying to heal during your divorce. And this is from my therapist. During your divorce, you're coping.
Yeah.
You're like in survival mode.
Staying above water.
Keep your head above water. Stay up on top of things. You know, even if it's half-assed, you're at least managing all of your tasks. And the healing is going to come afterwards. You know, that's the big thing. And I think too many of us, one of the reasons we catch so much conflict from our ex in the midst of this divorce is because we rip off our old skin of marriage and we become this new alpha invented female, hear me roar. But sometimes that's not the best strategy right away in the midst of a divorce. When your high conflict ex sees you all of a sudden have this new alter ego of power and confidence and all these things, sometimes that kind of fucks up your divorce a little bit and makes it take a lot longer than what it needs to. And that's a whole other strategy that we can talk about on a different day. But what do you think about healing? Really comes after you get through the mud.
I think so. I mean, you can start some of the healing during the process, but I think once it's that chapter is closed and like the ink is signed, is dry, that's when you are like, okay, now I'm really stepping into my new chapter where that's behind me and everything is ahead of me. And how do I want to move forward? And so then it's your time to really dive into guilt, shame, feelings of failure, anger and resentment, building your self-esteem, finding yourself again, you know, rebuilding your confidence. It's all of that stuff so that you can not only heal, but you're going to make smarter choices moving forward and not find yourself in the same situation over and over again. And which, by the way, if that's something you're struggling with, my online course, Confidence Ever After, will give you the roadmap step by step. We'll teach you exactly how to do that. So you can go from feeling guilty and not knowing how to set boundaries and feeling like shit about yourself or having anger and resentment to, I feel confident. I trust my choices. I trust myself. I know how to make better decisions that are aligned with who I want to be. I know where to go. I know it's like, it will totally help you with that transition into your new chapter.
It's a great course.
But it's so important. And just that self-reflection piece.
Yeah.
So many people skip that part. And I did that too after divorce number one. And that's how I found divorce number two, was because I didn't take the time to figure out what my role in all of it was. And it's not the blame game, but it's like really just understanding what role you played so that whatever things weren't working for you, then you can empower yourself by making different choices moving forward, which will give you different results.
Well, I think you have to focus on you. And I know there are people listening that are so focused on their co-parenting journey and what their ex is doing and how their ex is treating them. That's where their attention is. That's where their focus is. Well, if I could just fix the way he talks to me, if I could just fix the way he treats me, then I can move on. If I can get him to stop treating me like shit, then I can do better. If I can get him to co-parent better, then my life will be better. And I'm telling you guys, if you are waiting on that train to arrive, you're going to be sitting there until you crumble to dust because
that's victim mentality.
Yes.
Victim mentality is, well, I can't, you know, he keeps doing this and he keeps doing this and I can't move on because he keeps saying this or doing this. And it's victim mentality. I'm, you know, sorry, not sorry guys, but a lot of this does come down to you realizing that you will never have control over anything your ex is saying and doing, but you always have control over how you respond to it.
Yes. That's huge. I mean, I think when you guys, it took me 8 years to get to this point right here, that you can't wait for them to change the situation. I waited for my ex-husband to like me. I waited for him to say, thank you. I waited for him to say, you're a good mom. I waited for him to want to be my friend and co-parent. I was sitting and doing everything possible to, and I call it like the just method. If I just send this picture, if I just kiss his ass, if I just talk nicely. And my therapist just kept saying, Sam, all you're doing is every time he treats you like shit, you kiss his ass more. And I'm like, I know, but this will be the, no, it won't, Sam. It hasn't worked for years. Why do you keep doing it? And I'm like, honestly, because it's easier to focus on him than me. I wasn't right. ready to look at myself and go, how did I play a part in this? And me enabling that whole relationship where he treats me like shit and I kiss his ass. I watch my people do that all the time. But you know who else is watching you do that all the time is your kids.
Yeah.
My kids watched me bend over backwards for a man that did not like me. And they were watching me get crushed and they were watching me get talked down to. And it might not have been to my face sometimes. It was in their home with him. You know, here they hear me talk nice. Hey, let's send out a picture. Hey, let's call. Hey, let's do this. Hey, let's go sit by him. Hey, let's go take. And they're just like, do you know what he says about you at our house? Like, why are you trying to like him or have him like you? He doesn't. And they finally told me that. And it was like, that was fucking embarrassing having single digit children say, would you please stop? He hates you. Can you quit kissing his ass, please? Because it's humiliating to us and we feel horrible for you. That was humiliating in itself. You know, that my kids, and I'm grown, I'm supposed to be the adult, and they're telling me, stop being nice to a man that's mistreating you.
Right.
You know, so I could talk for days about that subject, but the next one is where everything changed. Learning boundaries.
Yes.
Learning boundaries. I had none. If he said, hey, Sam, right. do this. I was like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that you're not mad at me. Abso-fucking-lutely. So you don't take me back to court. What do you need, Bo? I kissed his, I had no boundaries. He'd call, I'd answer. He'd text, I'd respond. He email, here you go. He want the kids. There you go. I mean, I'm going to be late. Okay. I had none. Physical contact. Yep. Sure. We can talk. Mm-hmm. I had zero boundaries.
Yeah.
Zero. Zero.
Yeah. And then, some of that's just fear, right? Because you're like, if I try to soften the blow, he won't be so bad or do things or say things. But boundary setting and self-worth are intrinsically linked.
Absolutely.
So if you struggle with your self-worth and your self-esteem, then you probably also suck at setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. So the more you can work on trusting yourself and speaking up for yourself and feeling comfortable in your own skin and feeling more confident, boundary setting becomes easier because when you respect yourself, then you have higher standards for everyone else and you demand respect from others as well. And that's what boundaries are. It's communicating your limits. It's saying, I don't have the capacity to do this right now, or that's not something I'm willing to do, right? It's learning to say no, because you're honoring your limits and your needs. And when you do that, then it's easier to hold others accountable to do the same.
And what was sad for me when I finally saw this and I started implementing was how quick my kids followed me on right. the path of boundary setting, not just with their dad, but with me also, with peers, with other relatives. They were just became these freaking amazing children of boundaries. But the part that really crushed me was that I was forcing the no boundaries on my children before I bumped and hit my head and woke up. So for example, if my kids would come to me before boundaries were a thing in our household, and they'd say, you know, oh, I don't like it when this happens. I'm like, you know, I know, buddy, but you just got to do it. And I was forcing my kids to go do the hard thing with their dad versus being their advocate and their ally and saying, let me support you. I hear you. I validate you by standing up for you as well. Yeah. And let me give you some tips and tricks and tools. Instead, I'm like, oh, buddy, I'm going to get in trouble if you don't do that. So you have to go do this. And again, I'm not telling you to do anything you shouldn't do legally, but when you know shit is not right with your kids and you're bribing, coercing your kids because you fear a ramification as a fucking adult, I have a problem with that now. And that was me. I am the first one to tell you I was that person. I was bribing. I was coercing. I was like threatening, like, guys, you don't want me to get in trouble, right? You have to go do this X, Y, and Z. And I look back on that now and say, well, here's why they need therapy, you know, because I was forcing them. If it was anybody else, I wouldn't have forced them, but I forced them. And so once I started having these boundaries, then I was okay with my kids showing me and him boundaries. And then I'm like, fuck it, let's do it. Let's have a boundary. And that was a complete game changer. Now, part of me regrets not starting it sooner, but everything happens for a reason. I wouldn't be able to educate you guys so well if I had just followed all the rules from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But for me, my relationship with my kiddo, and this is coming from my therapist, she said, your relationship with your kiddo is supposed to be lifelong. And the damage that you cause your child as a child, they get to determine whether they want to have a lifelong relationship with you. So if you're making them do things for the ease and comfort of yourself, do you think you're going to have a long-term relationship with your kid? And I was like, well, I fucking hope so, but I don't think so if I stay on this path. And she goes, then you got to step up and change. Mm-hmm. Show them boundaries, show him boundaries, and they'll follow. And I had to trust her, and she was 100% right.
Yeah.
I had to trust it, that if I start showing boundaries, my kids will go, okay, we got this. We can do it too.
It's tough because a lot of times we know the right thing to do. Like, we can guide our children. We can say, oh yeah, you need to do that. If they're telling us about a situation with their friends or whatever, we're like, oh yeah, clearly you need to be doing this and you need to be
clearly doing this. Duh.
But like, it's tough to walk the walk too. But it's so true, because your kids don't necessarily do what you say. They do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which goes into in the next one, the perspective that you have to have, I think should be always when you're going through a divorce, always. This isn't the fucking kick in the nuts that I just did not understand. I'm here to have a lifelong relationship with my kids, not 18 years. And I think so many of you get coached by attorneys and coached by your family members who are so worried about, you know, the situation, your ex is doing this, your ex is doing that, they coach you on just 18-year relationship with your kiddo. So you do damaging things. You do only things that you would only do if backed into a corner for those 18 years. And your kids are going, what? And then when they have the freedom at 19 plus to make a decision on who they associate with, you might not be that person. And I think for me, had somebody said when my kids were 1 and 3, hey, look, they're going to be 30 and 33 someday, and you're going to have to explain your behavior when they're going through this divorce with you, I think I would have handled things way different. But I was so focused on the now of like, fuck this, this isn't right, this is wrong, blah, 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 you know, and then kids, you got to go, I don't want to get in trouble. And it was all this like here and now that I didn't look ahead to the future and go, fuck, they're going to be parents someday. They're going to have to reflect on this too, as how it affected them as a child and how they've ended up parenting their children and how they have relationships with people. I wasn't looking that far into the future. And so my perspective was so isolated and tunnel vision of right now that I didn't think about all the damage I was causing in the long-term effect with them. And there's been some damaging pieces there that I've had to work through with my older children big time. And so perspective, I think, is one of the key factors here of what are you focused on? Are you focused on saving your own ass? Are you focused on staying out of trouble? Are you focused on pleasing your co-parent? Where's your perspective lie? Because that's where your focus will be. Yeah. If your perspective is, I'm scared. You're going to live scared. You're going to have fight or flight forever.
Right.
You know, it's that, what are you focused on? Where is your mindset at? Are you present? Are you thinking about when you're going to have grandkids? Are you going to be there? I ask my clients that all the time. Do you think you'll be in the waiting room when your kid's having a baby? Are you going to be one of the first phone calls? Are you going to be invited to the wedding? What about that first grade field trip? Do they ask you to go with the child because they have to work? What you do now is affecting that decision-making later. And I just didn't have that perspective. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have. Fuck the court system for 18 years. I'm sorry. Once your kid turns 18 in one day, they don't give a fuck what you do with your kids. But man, do they hold it over your head for 18 years. But you have a long-term relationship with your children. That needs to be your perspective. What are they going to talk about when they're 30 and somebody says, hey, how was your childhood? Well, let me tell you, you got an hour. Let me tell you about my parents and how horrible it was. Let me tell you about being a divorced kid. What's going to be their perspective versus, I know my kids now will say, my mom's my hero. She got us out of a situation we didn't want to be in, and she supported us and she took over both jobs. I know that. Why? Because they've told me that. So they wouldn't have said that about the first 8 years though, because my perspective was jacked big time. All right, the next one, co-parenting communication.
Hmm.
This just goes back to boundaries. This to me is, if you're giving your co-parent access that's toxic, that's why you're having a toxic environment.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the boundaries. You're allowing communication to infiltrate your day-to-day.
Yeah.
This is huge. Like, we see this all the time.
All the time. And when you're, if this is a high conflict situation, if it's amicable, then this might not apply to you so much. Cause if you can kind of chit chat and talk on the phone and text and it's not a big deal, then great. But a lot of the majority of the clients that we work with are in more high conflict situations and they're trying to co-parent or parallel parent. And that's the thing, is you want to really only interact with your ex when it is absolutely necessary. Avoid face-to-face conversations, avoid phone call conversations, try to keep it to text, email, co-parenting app. Cause that was what helps you also get back in the driver's seat. If you're dealing with somebody who's super manipulative and triggering, it's really hard for you to communicate in an effective, productive way if you have to be like this, like right away with your answers. So if you're getting text messages or emails or co-parenting app, you can take a beat. You could just maybe read what their message is. First of all, determine whether or not it even requires a response, because a lot of times it doesn't. But then number two, close that laptop, go for a little walk, go watch a movie, go do some dishes, think about it, process it, and then regroup, and then you can come back and you can reply. And again, you guys, I'm all day, every day, you should just be using ChatGPT. It's 100%. Free. You can 100%. Copy everything they send to you, paste it into ChatGPT, tell ChatGPT the kind of response that you want them to create, keep it clear, concise, emotions out of it. Boom, here's your response, copy, paste, you send it back to them, and it will give you the best responses. And if you don't really know how to navigate ChatGPT, then grab my guide, because I sell tons of these guides, you guys, because it's got prompts and templates, and it helps you create a whole script library, and it's written specifically to guide women through using ChatGPT specifically for high conflict co-parenting conversations. So, but ChatGPT is free. You should be using it all the time. It's going to take so much stress out of, should I reply or should I hit that send button? Or is he going to take this wrong? Or I don't even know what to say or how to say this, or how do I tell him I don't want him to change the time that he comes to pick up the kids? Or how do I tell him that I don't want him to, you know, use ChatGPT every time?
It sounds so ridiculous, but it's what where it's at. I mean, I would have killed for ChatGPT. I mean, I would have killed
hell
for
the next
chapter. I would have killed for ChatGPT.
Yes.
Okay. The next one, legal guidance. Here is one that this is going to sting a few of you. You are making decisions and putting yourself in toxic environments and mindsets and just perception because you fear the, I'll take you back to court if you don't.
Yeah.
And you live in this fear-based mindset, which puts you in fight or flight. I am talking from somebody that lived this for fucking years of, I feared going to court, which I don't know why, because I had validated parking and I fucking knew everybody by first names in the whole courthouse. So I don't even know why I was scared, but you fear going back to court. And therefore it leaves you attached to your ex who's high conflict and abusive. And you're still connected. You're still, even though you're divorced, you are still connected because they use those words all the time. I'll take you back to court. So you're in constant fear of paperwork. You fear opening the mail. You fear opening your inbox. Anytime your lawyer calls, your stomach drops to your fucking feet and you just want to vomit. And you're just like, you're constant fear. And one thing that my great attorney that I ended with, Helen, said, Sam, at some point you got to live your life. And when we get the paperwork, if he wants to take you back, then we'll deal with it. But this looking over your shoulder 24/7 of like, what is this? Is this, she's like, you got to move on. Yeah. And don't worry, when he files something, it still has to be accepted. It still has to be heard. And then we fight it. But you living this life of like, you know, all the time, well, he'll take me back. Well, and if he does, he does. No, and I realized real quick, guys, nothing I did was going to stop him from taking me back. If he wanted to fucking file the paperwork, he could. It's simple as walk in, fill out the paperwork, pay the fee, and boom, I have paperwork. You know, we have a court date. And so, because the system is jaded. So that constant, you're making parenting choices because you fear going to court. Because I know it's costly, it's time consuming, it's anxiety ridden, it's, you got to take a day off work, you know, money, money, money. But you guys, we can't, again, we can't have a perspective where we're making choices based out of fear.
Yeah.
All the time. Well, I'll just give him that extra time because he asked, because I don't want to take him back. He'll say that I'm a bad co-parent. He'll say that I'm not being flexible. He'll say. And if he does, go ahead. Go ahead. Because at some point, you not sticking up for yourself is the reason you're in the problem you're in. I hate to tell you, you're playing that whole like, oh, if I don't, you're acting like the victim. You can stand up for yourself at some point and say, doesn't work for us right now. No. Show that boundary. You show it once, you're going to gain a little bit of confidence. Show it twice, you're going to fail and regress a little bit. Then you're just going to learn from it and go, God, I hate that I regressed and I gave in this time. I want to keep going forward with the no's and the no's and the no's. And I'm telling you, if you have one of those exes that fear or say that they're going to take you to court all the time, a lot of times, guys, they're just a barking dog that never bites. They just say it. Because if they really wanted to, go fucking do it. Like I always used to say at the end, do what you got to do. I'll take you back to do what you got to do. I'm not going to sit here and bend like fucking Gumby anymore just right. because you want to go want, won't, won't at me. And I go, oh no, you know, and then I give in. Like, again, what was that showing my kids? How did I have any self-worth when I would do that? He still had power because I let him. Like, this is a big one. I worried about court all the time, which is shocking mm-hmm. because I was there every 3 to 6 months.
Right. And we see that a lot. A lot of our clients feel that way. And they're just afraid, like, that they're going to do something wrong. I'm afraid to say this. I'm afraid to do that. Cause then what if the judge thinks that I'm being the asshole, or the judge thinks I'm being the high conflict one. And, but like you always say, play that out in your head. Like if they're saying, oh, I'm taking you back to court. Okay. Think in your mind. Okay. So this is what they're going to put in front of the judge. Is the judge really going to oversee this and go, yes, you know, shame on you, what you're doing? Or no, most of the time when you're dealing with a high conflict person, they would just want to bitch. They just want to take you back and try to get you in trouble for fucking everything. And a lot of it, the judge is just going to be like, you're wasting my time. Like, what do you even, and it's not going to amount to anything.
Absolutely. The next one is where the finances are through this whole process. And some of you are not living life because you have a lawyer bill. You're putting so much money into your lawyer fees and your lawyer bill, and you're pausing life, which is why the negativity is hanging out, is because you're not, everything revolves around that payment. Well, I owe my lawyer 200 this month. I owe him 500 this month. I owe 40 bucks this month, whatever it is. I'm telling you right now, if you owe your attorney a lot of money, you walk in and you say, okay, I need a payment plan and I need one now, or I'm filing bankruptcy in the next 6 months anyways, and I really don't give a shit about this bill. So do you want your money or not? Some of you need to take the higher hand and call not your attorney, but ask to talk to the bookkeeper, ask to talk to the financial person in the office, because they think of things differently. They'll say, okay, we'll put you on this type of payment plan. We'll put you on this. We'll put you on that. But you have to say at the end of the year, I can give you cash and my bill will go down by 30%. This is a negotiating thing, but I see too many people, me, myself, and I, that spent all this money on an attorney and stopped living. I mean, stopped living. I was like, oh, I can't do that. Well, I can't do that. And that just recreated so much resentment and hatred towards my ex even more, and the whole court system and my attorney and everything, because my life was on pause for the first 4 years because of a lawyer bill. And my lawyer bill took 12 years to pay off. But the first 4 years, it was more than my mortgage payment. And so it was ridiculous to be able to come up with this money every single month. Mm-hmm. And it just put me in such a fuckery of a mindset because I was so angry about how much this was costing.
Yeah.
And I looked at it like, this is his fault. You know, if he'd just agree, we'd be done with this. And so that just kept that negativeness around. So, yeah. I mean, find a balance. There's a lot of free stuff. In my mind, I couldn't even get there. I couldn't even get into the free stuff that I could have went and done. I was just so woe is me. Look at how much money I'm spending. This is fucking ridiculous. I said no to everything. People be like, hey, we'll pay for it. My pride got in the way and I say no. And now looking back on it, those people loved me and saw that I was struggling and still providing for my kids, but I was doing a lot of withouts. And here they were wanting to help me. And I was like, no. I got offended. I was like, no, fuck you. I don't need your hand.
Which is so funny because you're someone who's so generous. Like you always want to try to help people. Right.
That's a lot of the reason why now though, is because I know how much people put a wall up. So if they're even mentioning that they're struggling, it's way worse than what it is.
Right.
It's because if they're just casually mentioning it, it's way worse. Cause that was me. I just every once in a while be like, yeah, you know, money's tight. No, money was not even like close to being, it was below. I was red, overdraft, fucking, you wouldn't believe some of the stupid shit I did to get money. And that was where I just didn't have enough mindfulness to go, these are people that love me. And maybe there'll be a day where I am now in life that I could pay it forward back to someone else or back to them. You know, I'm just in a place now where I am paying my parents back. And I know they would never take money from the money they gave me. So I'm buying them big ticket stuff and events to go see them, the stuff that they enjoy. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got that because they gave like retirements to me, you know, and they're in retirement age. So, hey, let me do you a solid and pay you back by, you know, sending you on these things because I know how much you gave me. It all will go forward, guys. Like if I had to look back when I was really struggling financially, did I ever think that I would take that pain and that struggle and make it a business that thrives and helps people and also helps my own family now to where we are very comfortable? Would have never imagined it because I was so in that present just tunnel of I'm poor. I'm horribly poor. I'm always going to be poor. I'm never going to have money. When I build parenting plans for people and I'm like, hey, how many weeks of vacation you want? And they're like, I can't take a vacation. My work doesn't allow. And I'm like, you're not always going to be here. You're going to get a better job. You're going to find somebody new. Your life is going to be different. Someone's going to leave you money. Like you have to believe your life will be different. So plan for it to be different. You know, write in those vacations and hope that maybe your job changes and they give you 3 weeks vacation every year that you can take with your children. Don't get so zeroed in. I'm always going to be poor. Your life will change.
Yeah.
Number nine, we got two more and then we're going to wrap this up. Number nine is focus on your kids. Now, again, I see so many of you not doing this.
Yeah.
So many of you are on your phones, you're distracted, you're bitching about your situation. And again, bitching and talking about it just breeds the toxicity of the whole thing. And your kids are living through that too. You being negative, your mindset, and they're feeding off of your hatred, your anger, your frustration, your right. sadness, your bitterness, your resentfulness. They're feeding off of that. How many of you are really focusing on your children? I mean, 100% honesty, focusing while you're in the midst of this divorce, the time and attention and love your kids deserve.
Yeah.
Playing with them, phones down, one-on-one time, right. playing with them, not just in the room, but playing with them. This morning I walked out from getting ready and Jared was playing soccer inside the house with the kids, like these little, you know, those big plastic balls you see at the end of aisles, like at yeah. Target or Walmart. They're real like huge, but they're just made of air and that's it. They're really light. They were kicking balls. The amount of giggles that was coming from that room, from the two boys and Jared playing soccer this morning back and forth. That's what I mean. Taking just 10 minutes to make a memory to where when that kiddo goes to school and his teacher says, hey, did you have a good morning? And they're going to say, we kicked a ball inside the house and it was kicked. It actually kicked, you know, the walls and everything. That type of stuff. I know I wasn't. I'll be honest. I wasn't. I was like, go play. You're fine. You got a sibling. Go play. That's why I had two of you. Go get. I said get all the time. Get. Mm-hmm. I got to do this. Get. Go play. Regret. Huge regret. I let the divorce fuck my mind up to where I think I have to focus. I have to think about this paperwork. I have to do this. I have to do that. I got to call my mom. I got to call my attorney. I can't focus with these kids. They remember that. If you ask my older kids about their childhood, they'll say mom had her face buried in her computer most of the time.
Right.
Now, two reasons, my divorce and I was working a side job like you wouldn't believe because I had to pay bills. So obviously that's balloon worthy, but
And they say too, just quickly, studies show it. It's not the divorce. It's not splitting up that has negative impacts on the kids. It's how you process the divorce. It's how you're navigating the divorce that has those negative impacts on the kids.
100%.
So if you can get yourself to that place where you are, where you're healing, you're focusing on your healing. You're not just caught up in all that anger and resentment, and you're not just fuming with hatred and being triggered all the time. And you're not just constantly distracted by the divorce, and you can find peace and find that centered place. And you are interacting with your kids and you're encouraging them that everything's going to be fine. And then that completely changes the experience that they're having in relation to the divorce.
Right. Which is a great segue into the last one. Number 10, embrace growth.
Yeah.
Like when you see yourself nailing it and doing something well, or getting intrigued about something, getting excited about something, keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and don't worry about the judgment. You know, like when I wanted to start this business, I'm not going to lie, it was pretty scary to be like, hey, I'm going to talk about the most toxic thing that ever happened to me publicly. And I'm going to talk about my kids. I'm going to talk about my ex-husband. I'm going to talk about, you know, the family court system, the people I bump into still every single day. It was a lot, but it's like, but this is what I have to do to heal. I mean, this has been a tremendous healing journey for me, but also like, I want to keep learning. I want to keep going. Like, I don't care that I'm going to talk publicly. Like that's who I am. I'm just an overshare. So for me, embrace that's who I was instead of trying to like lock it in. Like, you shouldn't talk about that. That's that's a bad subject. Don't, you know, I have family members that were mortified that I was going to take this public. Mortified. You're going to tell people what you did. You're going to tell your failures. You're going to tell how much money you're going to. Yeah. Because I don't want anybody to ever go through what I went through. And so embracing the growth of this is who I was supposed to be. I was supposed to have gone through that so that I could educate thousands, if not millions of people to not make some of the easy mistakes that I could have avoided had I had the education behind it.
Totally.
So for me, it's reach for that. What do you want? You know, like get out of the rut that you're in. Otherwise, if you don't remove yourself, you're there.
Yeah.
You're still there.
You will be there.
I was there for 8 years. You will be there forever.
Right. No one's coming. What do you got on this? Yeah. And the perspective that is so important to take is, yes, divorce is an ending, a big one, a stressful one, an expensive one, and a painful one. But it's also the beginning. It really can be the catalyst for creating a truly amazing, fulfilling, happy life. Yeah. And so this is your second chance. This is an opportunity to give yourself the love that you've always needed, to figure out who you are, to learn how to stand on your own two feet and to really love yourself and to heal, to really heal the shit maybe you've been dragging with you since childhood. I mean, this is your chance to do it again, to get yourself to a place where you feel good about who you are, you know who you are, and then you can you slowly but surely start building a life that you really want and the one that you actually deserve to be living. So take advantage of it. Take advantage of the fact that you get a second chance to do it again and to do it right and to do it better.
Absolutely. You guys, if you've liked this episode, if this resonated with you, leave us a comment wherever you're watching this from. But I think this is one you need to save and maybe listen to again when you're hitting that like rough spot. And you're like, okay, out of the 10, what do I need to be focusing on this week? What am I struggling with? Where do I need to go? Pass this on to a loved one and say, these are all the things I'm feeling and I need you to listen to this to help me. Remind me of some of these things from this video and help me get through this process. This is not one I recommend doing alone. Divorce is just not something you should try to do solo. You need to find your network of people. That's why we created the Next Chapter. We wanted women to have a place to go to feel supported, validated, and get answers to questions that they have. They give us topics and we bring the topics and we find the people to talk to them. And it's a great resource. And today is Thursday, as we always record these on Thursdays and post them on Mondays. But we go in on Thursdays and we answer their questions. They type in questions and it's quick and it's easy. And we give those to them. So it's a great resource. Stay in there for a couple months. Stay in there for as long as you need. But again, thanks for joining us today. And we'll see you again next week.